Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Well, good morning and happy tax day, everyone. Yes, as you've been hearing, it's April 18th, not April 15th. But tonight at midnight is the deadline for getting your tax returns postmarked because Friday was a holiday in Washington, D.C. And we keep hearing that without hearing an explanation, so I looked it up. It's called Emancipation Day. It's usually April 16th, which was Saturday, so they observed it on Friday. On April 16th, in 1862, President Abraham Lincoln signed the Compensated Emancipation Act for the release of slaves in the District of Columbia. So Congress last week may have forced a voucher program on the D.C. local school district and prohibited the city from spending local tax dollars on abortions for poor women, neither of which it tells the states one way or the other. But they didn't take away the city holiday that celebrates freeing the slaves, so tax day is today. And, of course, President Obama and House Budget Committee Chairman Paul Ryan continued their smackdown over the weekend about the role of taxes in reducing the federal debt. But while there is plenty they disagree on, there is an element of tax reform on which it appears that they do agree, at least to some degree, and that is overhauling loopholes and tax deductions. Here's Ryan on CBS Face the Nation.
In exchange for losing the loopholes and deductions that mostly higher income earners use. So what we're saying is keep tax revenues where they are. Don't lower tax revenues, but clean up the tax code so that it works. If you have really high tax rates, what you end up doing is you penalize small businesses. You have to remember, Bob, most successful small businesses file their taxes as individuals. Most of our jobs come from these small businesses. The president is proposing to raise the top tax rate on these small businesses to 44.8%. We don't think that's good for jobs. We don't think that's good for economic growth. And when we tax our employers a whole lot more than our foreign competitors tax theirs, we lose, they win, and we don't want that. So just like the fiscal commission, the bipartisan fiscal commission said, lower tax rates, broaden the tax base for economic growth, and that's exactly what we're proposing.
Paul Ryan on Face the Nation with Bob Schieffer. So let's talk about the dueling deficit plans after a weekend cooling off period or maybe heating up period, including this area of mutual interest with Raihan Salam. He's a contributor to National Review and The Daily Beast. He writes The Agenda, the domestic policy blog for the conservative magazine National Review. He's also co-author with Ross Douthat of Grand New Party, How Republicans Can Win the Working Class and Save the American Dream. Hi, Raihan, thanks so much for coming back on WNYC.
Thanks very much for having me.
I see you've been writing about this whole area known as tax expenditures, which sounds like an oxymoron on first blush, right? We usually think of tax revenues and then government spending or expenditures. So what are these tax expenditures?
The basic idea is that the federal government tries to engage in a lot of social policy through the tax code. So we lose a lot of revenue by telling people, hey, if you're buying a house and spending money on mortgage interest, that's going to be tax-free up to X amount. We say the same thing for employer-sponsored health insurance coverage and a lot of other things. The problem is that these tax expenditures are a really bad way of making government policy. For example, if you say that we're going to give a huge tax break to employer-sponsored coverage, it has a number of ill effects. One of them is that if you don't get health coverage through your job, guess what? You don't get the subsidy. Or if you pay higher taxes because you have a higher income, well, you get a bigger tax break than someone who makes less money, which creates this very ironic situation where we're effectively channeling more of this government money to people who don't need it than to people who do.
And the president, in his speech on Wednesday, even mentioned two popular tax deductions by name, charity and home mortgage interest. Listen.
Beyond that, the tax code is also loaded up with spending on things like itemized deductions. And while I agree with the goals of many of these deductions, from home ownership to charitable giving, we can't ignore the fact that they provide millionaires an average tax break of $75,000, but do nothing for the typical middle-class family that doesn't itemize. So my budget calls for limiting itemized deductions for the wealthiest 2% of Americans, a reform that would reduce the deficit by $320 billion over 10 years.
President Obama from his speech on Wednesday. So, Raihan Salam, without getting into the question of tax rates yet, which we'll get to, how much are the president and Paul Ryan on the same track with how they're looking at reforming tax expenditures?
I think that there's a really broad consensus that there is room for savings to be achieved on tax expenditures. The big problem is that the president said, well, let's curb tax expenditures for the top 2%. And the thing is that, you know, that's easy because then, well, someone else is going to be doing it rather than those middle-class Americans who form the bedrock of, you know, both political party support base. The thing is that there are a ton of households making between about $100,000 and $250,000 a year who benefit tremendously from these tax expenditures. And if you don't curb the tax expenditures for those guys, you're not going to be able to make the progress you need to make.
Although Ryan seemed to say the same thing about this being a top earner, loophole system in the clip that we played, in exchange for losing the loopholes and deductions that mostly higher income earners use, et cetera, et cetera. So it almost sounds like they're saying the same thing, but you're saying they're really not.
I think that they're saying something subtly different. I think that what Paul Ryan is saying, and also what the president has suggested at different points, is that, you know, it's disproportionately used by higher income Americans. But the thing is that, you know, in terms of the United States, the median household income is a little bit above $50,000. So while in a place like New York City, it seems like, well, a guy who's making $150,000 who owns a condo, you're squarely in the middle class. And that might be true, but in terms of the country, you're pretty affluent. And so when you're using that tax break, you're using something that is benefiting a more affluent household over a less affluent household in a way that makes it hard for us to have those low tax rates that Paul Ryan was describing.
So let's get further into what Ryan is really looking to do in terms of redistribution of the tax burden, if that's the right way to put it. Because, again, in that clip, he said the loopholes and deductions mostly go to the wealthier taxpayers. But why go through these contortions just to stay revenue neutral, which he says his tax reform would also be, totally revenue neutral, bottom line? Because in that same clip, he argues for letting the wealthiest keep more of their income because they create jobs with it. So he can't be arguing that the wealthiest will get a tax break and that they'll be hit just as hard when we reconfigure the loopholes and deductions. It's a contradiction. How do you square that, or how do you understand it?
Well, I think the thing is that the tax code right now is treating households making the same amount of money really, really differently depending on other characteristics. So let's say you are, like me, a renter. A renter and a homeowner at about the same level of income are treated very differently because the renter is taking a big hit, whereas the homeowner is getting this big tax subsidy through the tax code. So in that sense, New Yorkers in particular get a really raw deal from the way the tax code works. On the other hand, there's a very big state and local tax deduction, which is particularly valuable for folks who live in high-tax states. In fact, some people think that having a big state and local tax deduction is subsidizing states that have high taxes over those that don't.
Right. In other words, the deduction on your federal income taxes for the states that we might have, for the taxes that we might have paid to our states, like New York.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that the real goal of tax reform for someone like Representative Paul Ryan is to have a more level playing field, to say that, look, if you're a renter in New York City or if you're a homeowner living in Dallas, Texas, we should try to treat you equally so that when you're making a decision about where you want to live or where you want to start a business, you're not necessarily looking so much to, you know, how the federal tax impact is going to affect you, but rather to those underlying economic fundamentals.
Which might sound like a level playing field theoretically, but who does it really benefit and who does it really hurt? I'm thinking of if the wealthy are keeping more of their profits, hopefully to grow the economy with, then that revenue-neutral tax base has to come more from somewhere else. And I notice Ryan also used the term broaden the base. And the math and the language of all this suggests that he might think some lower-income people aren't paying enough taxes. Am I reading between the lines right?
I think that that's it's a little complicated. The way we think about progressivity on the tax side sometimes misleads us into thinking about how progressive government as a whole is. So what you might call Paul Ryan's approach, you could also call the Swedish solution. In Sweden, they have a tax system that relies much more heavily on flat consumption taxes. So that means that a lot of working class folks are paying that same flat consumption tax that a richer guy is paying. The richer guy is also paying some taxes on top of that. But, you know, it actually creates a system that is somewhat more regressive in some respects. But the thing is that that money goes to fund a pretty good government that offers pretty good services. And those services are used a lot more by poor and middle class folks than by rich people. So the thing is, what is the most efficient way to raise tax revenue? And sometimes, yeah, that's going to mean that a middle-class homeowner in Dallas, Texas, is going to pay a little bit more than someone who makes a bit more money and is a renter living in high-tax, high-cost Manhattan.
Politically, is that from the conservative theory that the Wall Street Journal editorial page and others have articulated, that if people who make less have higher tax rates than they do now, then they'll get on the tax reform, tax reduction bandwagon, along with the wealthy who benefit the most?
Yeah, I think that that could happen. But I think a better way of thinking about this is that, look, tax expenditures are really opaque. People don't fully understand them, and they really have a very unfair impact. And they actually will give us a lot more tax revenue than raising marginal tax rates. So we're spending $100 billion every year on the mortgage interest tax deduction that, lest we forget, doesn't give renters a dime. And the Bush tax cuts for high earners, you know, the very rich that a lot of folks on the left of center side were attacking, that cost $700 billion over 10 years. So you actually get much more revenue by getting rid of that one tax expenditure, let alone a lot of other less justifiable tax expenditures, than you would from raising those marginal tax rates. And we can debate about whether raising marginal tax rates is a good thing or a bad thing, but there's a lot of consensus among economists that tax expenditures are just bad any way you slice it.
Raihan Salam from National Review, as we talk about closing tax deduction loopholes on this tax day. Also talking loophole and deduction reform is the so-called Gang of Six, not just Obama over here and Ryan over there, but three Democratic and three Republican senators looking to do a grand bargain, bipartisan, long-term budget deal, deficit reduction deal. Here's Gang of Six member, Virginia Democrat Mark Warner, also on Face the Nation, arguing for higher taxes and less government spending.
I think you got to look at both sides of the ledger. Long before I was in politics, I spent 20 years in business. I built companies, and you've got to look at the revenue side, you got to look at the spend side. We're looking at a ratio of about $3 in cuts for every additional dollar in revenues. And the revenues we're talking about literally are coming from lower rates, where we can lower our rates on individual and on corporate rates back to where they're much more competitive on a worldwide basis. But we're getting rid of a number of the tax expenditures. I mean, a fact that I'm not sure most Americans realize, we collect about $1 trillion a year in income taxes, yet we have $1.2 trillion a year in income tax expenditures, deductions, many of them that are popular, charitable deduction, home mortgage deduction. If we would cut back on some of those, we could actually lower rates and still increase revenues.
Senator Warner, and he used that term, tax expenditures. So, Raihan, any idea what the centrist version of this might look like?
I think what they're probably going to do is take a page from the Bush tax reform panel a few years back. And what that tax reform panel proposed is taking something like the mortgage interest deduction and turning it into a flat credit. They also wanted to do the same thing for the health insurance deduction, the health insurance exclusion, and a bunch of other things. And the idea there is that when you make it a simple, refundable credit, then if you're a middle-class person, you can take advantage of that. But you don't get a much bigger advantage if you're much richer, if you're paying a much higher tax rate. And I think that makes a lot of sense. It's not as far as I would want to go, but I think that it's a good middle step.
What do you think about the Gang of Six? Are they about to come up with a grand bargain that both sides can embrace on taxes and Medicare and other deficit reduction elements?
I have no idea if both sides are actually going to embrace it, but I am very encouraged by it, because when you look at some of the folks on both sides of this, if you look at Dick Durbin from Illinois, if you look at Tom Coburn from Oklahoma, these are people who really strongly represent the liberal and the conservative sides respectively, and they seem to be in the process of reaching a decent consensus. And I find that extremely encouraging. The other thing I find encouraging is that people have focused on how far apart the president and Paul Ryan are. But we suddenly are leaving this realm of shadow boxing and kabuki theater of debating the budget and talking about the real things we'd have to do, the real visions for getting us off this high debt path.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because that's where I wanted to end it. Because one way to look at the Obama and Ryan political jockeying is that it does not actually degrade the debate in this case, like some destructive polarizing rhetoric, that it's just the opening bargaining positions for both of them necessary to let their bases know that they get it about their bases' fears and concerns and hopes, but that both men are serious about coming to a very historic compromise, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, as a conservative, I tend to think the president hasn't owned up to the kind of tax increases we'd need to see to keep things going as they are. But, yeah, I think that it is huge progress, and I think that that's something we should all be proud of.
All right, we will leave it there for today with Raihan Salam. He writes the Agenda National Review's domestic policy blog and is the author with Ross Douthat. I know your book title. I have it. It's Grand New Party, How Republicans Can Win the Working Class and Save the American Dream. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. So we were talking about Paul Ryan versus President Obama, but it's not just in Washington that the political debate is polarized. Coming up next, we'll do a call-in for teachers and other educators here in New York on this Passover and Easter week. Happy vacation to you all. Happy Passover to our Jewish listeners starting tonight. The call-in is on the offer that the New York City Schools Chancellor made over the weekend, the new one, Dennis Walcott, to tone down the heated rhetoric on both sides regarding education. Standardized tests, closing failing schools, some other things. And our question for you teachers is, and other educators, are you interested in this deal? Do you think the rhetoric has gotten too hot on both sides? Is Dennis Walcott coming in as a peacemaker in a way that can lead to a better discussion on education policy in New York City? So, school vacation out, lines open, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Teachers, principals, anyone else in the system, do we need to tone down the polarized debate about standardized tests, closing failing schools, and other points in education policy? 212-433-9692. We'll take your calls right after this.